President Zelensky of Ukraine wants negotiations on European Union membership for his country to start this year. As the first anniversary of the Russian invasion approaches, President Zelensky has been meeting EU leaders in Kyiv in talks dominated by the promise of fresh sanctions against Russia, financial and humanitarian support for Ukraine and the prospect of EU membership. The European Union is represented by Charles Michel on behalf of the 27 EU heads of government and Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Commission. She yesterday led a delegation of 16 commissioners to Kyiv, including Ireland's Mairead McGuinness, who's just back from the Ukrainian capital and joins us now from Brussels. Very good afternoon to you, Mairead McGuinness, and thanks for talking to us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brian.
Perhaps we can begin with this question of sanctions, because the European Union now is promising a 10th round of sanctions against Russia over the invasion of Ukraine. What is likely to be included in this latest batch of sanctions on Russia?
Well, these are still being discussed and negotiated. So rather than going into detail, just to give an overall comment on sanctions, I mean, these are unprecedented. The 9 packages we've rolled out thus far, and the 10th will add to that. My view is, because I'm responsible for implementation, is that last year was the year we rolled out these sanctions. Now we must focus on effective implementation. And the truth of the matter is that sanctions are hurting Russia. They will try and find ways to circumvent that, and we have to be alert to it. So a lot of the work is focusing on making sure that the 9 packages are implemented effectively in member states and we avoid circumvention. And the details of the 10th package will likely be revealed as we come up to the awful first anniversary of this illegal invasion in Ukraine.
But in fact, how effective have the sanctions been? I'm looking, for example, at a report that was prepared for the United States Congress, and America has its own package of sanctions, of course. And it concludes that the sanctions have created difficulties for Russia. This was at the end of last year. But to date, have not delivered the economic knockout that many predicted. The Russian economy has weathered the sanctions better than many expected.
Well, the point I made in my opening there, Brian, is to that effect, that Russia can find ways around them. That doesn't mean that we don't focus on making sure what we have on the table is implemented. And we're working with the US, Canada, Japan and the UK so that we coordinate our efforts. But it's very clear that Russia knows that it has no access to technology, to services, to trade, to financial services. It will look for other ways to do these things. And that's why, to some extent, because of the complexity of sanctions, we shouldn't expect an overnight impact. We will have an impact over time. But the point, and I need to repeat it, is the more we, if you like, put pressure on Russia by way of our sanctions, the more they will seek to find others globally who perhaps think like them, who will allow them circumvent. So it is a global effort amongst allies of Ukraine to make sure that there isn't that level of circumvention and that over time we do get the economic impact in Russia that these sanctions are designed
but
to have.
Overall, what is the ultimate objective of these measures? What are they designed at the end of the day to achieve?
Well, if you look at technology, the ultimate objective is to make sure that Russia doesn't get technology to allow it keep building ammunition and weapons to attack innocent Ukrainians. So that's on one side of the coin. Firstly, they're designed to show Russia that we do not at all accept their illegal invasion in Ukraine. They are killing civilians. They are there are war crimes being committed there. We could not stand idly by and do nothing. And our sanctions are a way of showing in a very strong way to Russia that we mean business. We support Ukraine. We are doing everything we can to make sure that Russia is cut off from the global financial system, from access to technologies. And there will be more stepping up of these things. But I repeat the point, and this is a challenge for all of us who are working to support Ukraine as they enter this horrible anniversary, that all we have put in place now requires absolute implementation. And I work across our member states and will be bringing experts together to see where the problems are, but crucially to see where the circumvention is, because where there is an illegal war, and this is an illegal war, there will be those who will seek to profit. And we have to make sure that doesn't happen, because it really will do harm to Ukraine.
The war, of course, has resulted in the displacement of many millions of Ukrainians, both within Ukraine and beyond its borders. In this country, I think the latest figures are 71,000 Ukrainians have sought refuge here, in addition to growing numbers of those looking for international protection. Now, as these numbers have grown, so too have protests around the country to the housing and accommodating of refugees and asylum seekers. How concerned are you at that?
Well, firstly, Russia has weaponized people, which is a horrific thing to do, forcing mainly women and children to flee their homes and find refuge. Many find refuge close to Ukraine. Others have come to Ireland. I'm aware of those protests. And I think others who are closer and know more about them have commented. When people are destitute because they've left their homes, when they have no home to go to anymore, we have to and are looking after them. There is pressure on the system in Ireland. I know there are housing issues that have to be dealt with. But I would hope that the protests don't represent the majority view of people in Ireland. Conscious, and I'm aware that the Minister has made a special plea to find new premises to accommodate refugees who need to be looked after. I hope this isn't a development, but we need to be very mindful of what these protests say to people who come in, who are frightened, and many of them young children. And I think Ireland has always, you know, been very welcoming of people. We ourselves as a race in the past have had to go elsewhere and didn't always get the welcome that we might have wanted or needed. And Irish people have a generosity, notwithstanding the pressures that are there. It has been quite extraordinary that despite the efforts to use people as a weapon in this war, where Ukrainian citizens have made their way to other member states of the European Union, they've integrated mm-hmm. into the work employment, they're in our schools. And indeed, what we've done as a commission, as a European Union, we're making sure that children have access to their own curriculum so that they can go back, hopefully sooner rather than later, and be part of the education system in Ukraine again.
I suppose these protests aren't unique to Ireland. What do you think governments that are facing this around Europe can do to give a lead?
Well, I think governments are giving a lead. I think the leadership of the Irish government has been very strong in this Taoiseach and the Taoiseach who is just the outgoing Taoiseach. And I think that strong leadership has to be worked on then at community level. And I did hear Seamus Boland this morning talking about, you know, there are community leaders who are doing a lot of work. You probably mm-hmm. only hear about the protests. We don't hear about mm-hmm. the incredible community work going on all over Ireland mm-hmm. to welcome refugees, to make them feel at home. And remember, they will contribute to Irish society because there are many parts of our economy that need workers. So it isn't as if they're a burden. These are people who've been attacked in their own homes and who literally have had to flee.
Just finally, a word about Ukraine's possible membership of the European Union. Now, President Zelensky looking for talks to start this year. It already, of course, has candidate status, but we know that in previous cases of countries joining the Union has taken decades in some cases, certainly very many years. What's a realistic timescale, would you say, for Ukraine?
We don't have a timescale, but it's very clear that Ukraine are on a path to EU membership, and they understand that the process takes time. But already, and this was the meat of our discussions yesterday, we heard clearly where Ukraine is looking at its legislation in a whole raft of areas to make it in line with the EU acquis. And of course, there is a real desire and an urgency on the Ukrainian side to be part of the European Union. They want freedom. They want to have their own sovereignty. They mm-hmm. want to enjoy the benefits that we have in terms of being part of a union of nations.
But it's a long process.
It has taken some time, indeed, in many, many cases. But from our meetings yesterday, I will not put a timeline on it, I think Ukraine knows what needs to be done. We are going to help them to get there, so they're not alone in this.
Very good.
But these things do take time, but it will mean improvements in Ukraine, in its legislation, across a whole range of areas.
Commissioner Mairead McGuinness, thanks very much for talking to us on the News at One.